You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast with James Rapine and Daryl Ryder on 92.3thefan.com.
What up and welcome into another edition of the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. I'm James Rapine along with Daryl Ryder. We are your beat writers for 92.3 The Fan, 92.3thefan.com. We cover all three of the sports teams here in Cleveland, plus a bunch of other stuff here at The Fan. So if you're looking for the latest Browns news, Indians news, Cavaliers news with the draft, less than 36 hours away, well, you can find it in one spot, 92.3thefan.com. A quick reminder to subscribe, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, including the radio.com app. Leave us a five-star review so more Cleveland sports fans can find this podcast. We got some Browns on tap. We'll talk about the Tribe, who are suddenly surging a bit, four games above 500. Will that continue? But let's start, Daryl, with, I'm not even going to lie, my favorite sport. Let's start with some hoops. NBA draft is tomorrow. What?
Basketball is your favorite sport?
Oh, yeah. I like the way they dribble up and down the court.
I thought football was your favorite sport.
No, I love football, though. I love sports. That's how you could tell.
You're just a draft guy, I'm noticing. Because first you said you live for the NFL draft. Now you're saying you live for the NBA draft.
Oh, I love drafts. It's hope. Drafts are hope.
No wonder you fit.
No one knows this better than the city of Cleveland.
No wonder you fit in so well. You are all about the draft potential.
And I wrote about the draft, by the way. Check it out right now at 92.3thefan.com. All right, let's start. Oh, you saw that? You probably disagreed. You read it. I know you read it.
Same guy that wanted Lonzo Ball.
Would have been great with the fifth pick. You know what I want? A future all-star with the fifth pick. And I hear Jarrett Culver, and I hear DeAndre Hunter from Virginia. And I'm like, you know what? Those guys aren't future all-stars. So you could take that to the bank right now. I don't sense future all-star stardom for those guys. I need more of a roll of the dice, which as a Browns beat writer, Daryl, you're like, what? Roll the dice? Don't do that. Play it safe. No. The Cavaliers aren't going to be good playing it safe. They need to draft a future all-star with the fifth pick tomorrow. It can be done. It needs to be done. They brought John Beilein in here for a reason. That's what they need to do.
I mean, hey, I hope they find the future all-star. They better find the future all-star. I'm not confident they're going to find the future all-star. I'm not really excited about this draft class because I've said for months, and it appears that a lot of the NBA experts that actually do this for a living, as far, you know, like breaking down the hardcore draft analysis, it doesn't appear to be a very deep draft. It's very top-heavy.
Here we go.
So again, listen.
They can't get anyone good with the fifth pick. That's a bad draft.
That's not what I'm saying.
It's a bad draft.
I just hope that they get the right player. I do.
Didn't you watch ESPN the other day? They said it's an awful draft after the third pick.
I do think that the Pelicans may have inadvertently done the Cavaliers a solid. Ironically, David Griffin could potentially help the Cavaliers with the trade of Anthony Davis, from the standpoint the Pelicans aren't likely to take maybe the player that the Cavaliers wanted with that fourth pick.
Whereas, Darius Garland from Vanderbilt.
Where if the Lakers had that pick, if you're Kobe Altman, you're still chewing your nails pretty good, hoping that they don't take your guys. So I hope that they make the right pick. I hope they take the best player and they don't just try and fill a need. So that means if you take another point guard, so what? Take another point guard. You know, I've heard conversation that is something that they are thinking of doing, that John Beilein really would like to run a two guard system, a two point guard system. I should be more specific there. I'm not saying you can't find an all-star. Drafts are just like anything else. You're projecting, you're hoping. I hope they pick the kid that does turn into that all-star. And let's not forget, not only do they have that fifth pick, they got the 26th pick in this draft as well. And again, NBA history has shown you can find good quality all-star caliber players late in the first round of a draft too, but it all comes down to you doing your homework the right way and not only finding the player, but having a little lady luck on your side as well, and that player stays healthy for you and performs at a high level.
I'm ashamed of you right now.
Why are you ashamed of me?
Ashamed?
What else is
there? I'm kind of embarrassed for you, and we're in like a 10 by 8 room alone, and I'm still embarrassed for you right now.
I'm sorry. Who is the stud?
Come in here, and before we press record, you say, it doesn't matter who the Cavs pick.
Doesn't.
They're not going to win for the next decade. And then the recording starts, and it's like, yeah, I hope they get an all-star. We'll see, you know. Are you kidding me? I'm embarrassed for you. You went soft on me in like 4 minutes.
They are.
You tried to play the PC political nice thing just because you're going to be at the event tomorrow doesn't mean that you can't be honest. You don't think that they're going to turn it around tomorrow. You don't think that that's a.
No. I
it doesn't matter to you who they pick.
I really think we're headed for basketball purgatory.
Oh, come on.
Where the ceiling is where it was like in the 90s, where you're good enough to make the playoffs but get your ass kicked in the first round. And when you get into that cycle, your ability to improve your team in rapid fashion with that. So here's why NBA teams tank, okay? Because I saw this, there was a debate on Twitter yesterday about the draft. Pro Football Talk weighed in and said how the draft is just so against America. First of all, if it were not for drafts in pro sports, you'd be so top-heavy, okay? You would have no franchises in Cleveland, Ohio. The San Antonio Spurs would not have put together the dynasty that they... Because nobody says, hey, I'm going to go play for Oklahoma City. No one wants to say, oh, I'm going to go play in Cleveland, or I'm going to play in St. Louis, or I'm going to play in San Antonio, or Memphis.
Dude, I don't think the Patriots would be a dynasty.
Well,
even the Patriots.
So my
you wanna
my
play
point
in that
is,
cold?
Is the
no.
I my point is that the drafts actually, not always, but sometimes help maintain some semblance of a balance of power in these leagues and give your smaller market franchises an opportunity to put something together. Now, I'm not going to criticize players in the player empowerment movement. Now, I said this on my show on Sunday. You know, I think LeBron James's legacy as a basketball player isn't so much the three championships, or as we do this podcast, this is the third anniversary of the Cavaliers completing their comeback over Golden State and winning their first NBA championship.
What was the biggest play of that, real quick? The block or the shot?
The block. The block.
Really?
It was the most incredible play I've ever seen, because LeBron came full court from the other side of the floor to block that shot. Because that would have given Golden State the lead.
And no one could score. No one could score during this stretch. It was a very ugly game at this point. Everyone was just exhausted.
Yeah, game seven, tanks on empty. I don't want to diminish Kyrie's shot because it is the biggest shot in franchise history. I could argue that Kevin Love's pseudo-defense on Steph Curry, forcing him to take a non-rhythm shot.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Curry missed that and the Cavaliers got the rebound, we had the oh crap Cleveland moment when LeBron got fouled, went down, and it looked like he broke his wrist with like 8 seconds to go. And the Cavaliers leading, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh bleep, he's going to miss all these. He's not going to be able to shoot the free throws because he broke his wrist, and he's going to miss them all. They're going to come down, get the tying three-pointer, we're going to overtime, and they're going to win game seven in overtime. Like, I had those things, thoughts going in my mind as I'm watching LeBron writhe in pain on the floor holding his arm.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's he do? He goes up and, you know, hits one of the two free throws, and that gives you the four. And as soon as he hit that free throw, it was like, okay, it's over. Now all they got to do is just get these 9 seconds off the clock.
Yeah, one stop and it's over. And that's what LeBron said in the huddle. One stop.
And we can, you know, pop the champagne and start celebrating. So I was awake from Sunday morning all the way through about 2 to 3 a.m. Tuesday.
Were you really?
Nonstop. Well,
you had to work, obviously.
I mean, worked all night. Writing columns and you know, all that kind of stuff, doing social media and everything else.
Were you there or were you here?
No, I was here. Gotcha. I tried to power nap, so I turned on Ken and Anthony's show.
they do put you right to sleep.
I wanted to hear, you know, how they went, you know, how they handled it. It was a great show. I didn't go to bed. And then I went out to the airport, which is just, you know, 5-10 minutes from my house. Went out to the IX Center, covered him coming off the plane with the trophy, you know. And
was J.R. Smith shirtless by then? I thought he was.
He was absolutely shirtless.
The Hennessy.
They sweated out. They were all bleep faced because they came in late. They came in late from Vegas.
Dude,
They flew from Golden State. They stopped
to Vegas.
To Vegas to celebrate. And then, because they were, they
LeBron
were,
has his own area in Vegas that no one would even be able to find.
Yeah.
so I bet that Vegas trip was unlike any other.
Yeah. He has I call it Area 23 in Vegas.
Correct.
It was funny because I think they were supposed to come in like at 11:30 or something. They were supposed to touch down and someone comes like, "Hey, Daryl, just so you know, the play's running late." I go, "Yeah, shocker. Late night in Vegas, huh?" Yeah. You know, and I think they landed like around 1:30 or whatever. You know, the plane's taxing over to where they do the charter stuff, which is like right by the IX Center. And the fire trucks are doing the water cannon salute as the plane's coming by. The IX was just packed. The parking lot, the IX Center, just overflowing with people. Talking to a few that were on the plane as they were landing, the entire plane marveled because you obviously could see from the air the amount of humanity that was on the ground waiting for them.
Yeah.
And they were just in awe at the amount of humanity that was on the ground waiting for them. And then, of course, 2 days later, we had the big parade, which I got up at 5 a.m. for. It took me 4 hours to get to downtown Cleveland via the Rapid. I didn't even try and drive downtown because there's a Rapid station by my house.
I wouldn't have that problem.
Yeah, I know. It took me 4 hours to get downtown. And then my assignment was the rally that day. It was to cover the rally. So I'm like, you know, being the smart aleck that I am, like, I'm going to walk the parade route and, you know, film and take video take video and shoot some pictures and whatnot. And I get halfway up East 9th Street and then you couldn't move. And this was like an hour. Oh. About an hour before the parade.
You couldn't even cut through. It was too packed.
And the parade that day, my goodness, James, the parade and Toronto's parade was incredible. And Toronto obviously is a bigger municipality than Cleveland is, so obviously they have more people at their parade than Cleveland. But this was an all-timer because they couldn't get the vehicles through. If you go back and you look at some of the footage of the parade and the pictures and that, the sea of humanity, because they didn't put barriers up East 9th Street.
Oh.
So the cars had to inch through. So the parade took like 3 hours longer.
I couldn't imagine being the driver.
And then
it's the last thing I'd want to be.
So then we get to the rally, and you know, everyone, you know, does their speeches where then LeBron gets up and drops like 80 F-bombs in the speech. Jim Brown walks up and one of the moments that makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up, he comes out and he's holding the Larry O'Brien trophy and he hands it to LeBron, you know, and a symbolic passing of the torch from one champion to another. That was an incredible moment.
LeBron giving Dan Gilbert the thumbs up very awkwardly. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, the
ignore that one, keep going.
Yeah, I was also going to say, you know, Ernest Biner was there.
Sure.
Josh Cribbs was there, Machine Gun, like they invited so many people from Cleveland sports past that came close but never got it. It was a real inclusive event and it was a long day, I'm not going to lie, because there was nothing to eat or drink for about 12 hours. and it was one of the greatest days I've ever covered. Walking around, talking to fans and people that flew in from California overnight so that they could be at the parade and be there with, like, their kids. Mm-hmm. Or they flew in from Arizona where they were retired to come. Incredible. People drove overnight from, like, Maryland and Virginia.
I picture something, and obviously I wasn't here for the parade, but there are pictures of people standing in the parking garages.
Yeah, well, there are people hanging off the parking garages.
That's what I'm saying. Like, just all over, just trying to get a peek of a parade. Yeah. You know, we've all seen a parade, but this, it meant so much.
It was the party of parties. And then a couple days later, LeBron had a celebration down in Akron. I think Lock 3 is what it's called. They're parked down in Akron. And he, you know, he comes out there. He goes, you know, it took a kid from Akron to end a 52-year championship drought. So it really was a special couple of weeks after that championship. The city just was on fire in celebration. Of course, later that year, the Indians got all the way to the Game 7 of the World Series.
It was the opposite 3-1.
Yeah, and then they are the ones that upchucked the 3-1 lead to the Chicago Cubs, but still doesn't take away what a great year 2016 was. I would say the best year in recent Cleveland sports history, because back, I think, in 1948, it was the Browns, Indians, and Cleveland Barons all won championships that year.
You remember that, too.
Yeah, I do. I know my history.
No, I meant you remember it like you were alive then. It was a joke.
Oh, gotcha.
Went right over your head.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. No, but that's way back. Yeah,
so,
no, most of our listeners are like,
So as we talk about that, and I look at back on track, yeah. I look at this draft.
I'm sure our listeners don't mind going down that.
No. That is very,
reliving that day. That's why I was like, I'm going to let Daryl go.
Yeah.
Here,
so. But I think getting back to that level right now, it's the impossible climb for the Cavaliers. It's gonna take a tremendous amount of patience with John Beilein. I love the hire of Lindsey Gottlieb, but it's gonna take a tremendous amount of patience. And what I was saying about the free agency, you know, these drafts help maintain some semblance of a competitive balance. And while these players are free to do the free market thing when they do become free agents, and that's LeBron's lasting legacy. I think that's what drove me off into this.
Yeah.
The flashback.
No, and it is. I completely agree with you. I was actually listening to something today. 2010, I get it. It was heartbreaking here.
Yeah.
But, like, it changed the way we view free agency, the NBA offseason. It changed everything. Like, the way it's covered now is completely different, and it started with the decision.
Yeah. And that is going to be, I think, LeBron's lasting influence on the NBA, is the fact that he has empowered the players. And he is so powerful. And his agent, Rich Paul, I mean, I asked Chris Fedor from Cleveland.com this on Sunday, if Rich Paul was the most powerful person in the NBA right now. Because whatever he wants, he gets. You want Anthony Davis in Los Angeles? Now, granted, it took about 5 or 6 months longer than they would have liked,
mm-hmm.
but the bottom line is Anthony Davis is going to be a Los Angeles Laker, and that was the plan, you know, 6-8 months ago.
I do think Rich is doing what his client wants, though.
Because I think
a lot of people perceive it as, and I'm not saying you do, a lot of people are like, oh, Rich Paul's helping out LeBron, and I'm like, yeah, but I think Anthony Davis wants to be in L.A., and yeah, maybe LeBron's part of the reason, but I don't think Rich Paul's like, oh, I'm helping my childhood friend from Akron, Anthony Davis. You're going to the Lakers.
Yeah.
You know, Anthony Davis is a grown-ass man.
Yeah. And so I'm just objectively looking at what the Cavaliers have in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just, it's going to be a steep, because there's no superstar at 5. Now, that's not to say that the player that they don't pick doesn't butt into that in a couple years. But here's the problem. By the time that player gets to that level, does that player still want to be here? When they're, you know, do they want to sign an extension, or do they just want to go off? And so this is the problem that these NBA teams are going to have. You know, look at
that's
Pelicans.
The problem.
They invested those years in working with Anthony Davis, and he becomes a perennial NBA All-Star, and then guess what happens? He gone.
That's the problem.
And luckily they've got the bounce of the ping pong balls.
That's
and a
the problem
rock.
With bad NBA teams. people are going to hate me saying this, and I don't care. LeBron left because the Cavaliers did not surround him with enough talent from 2003 to 2010.
Because they built the roster worried about him leaving, they kept building caused him to leave.
Go get a star. You got to get star.
But here's the problem. You can trade for him.
Oklahoma City did. There are plenty of small markets that thrive. But guess what?
Zion
will be in New Orleans for the next 15 years.
I disagree.
If they build around him. The reason Anthony Davis did not stay and wanted out of New Orleans is because their best move was trading everything for a disgruntled distraction in DeMarcus Cousins.
Here's the problem, and this is 100% true. LeBron James did in 2010, before the decision, he did initially try to recruit people to come to Cleveland to play with him in the Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. And they
Chris Bosh.
And they didn't want to come. And so he then said, the only way I'm going to win a championship is if I lose, and I have to win championships, so I have to leave. And this is so it's easy for you to say, oh, just, go ahead and build the team around him. No, the way you build the team around people is through the draft, because free agency, unless you're the big market or the sexy hot team, you're not going to be. The Cavaliers are never going to recruit free agents. They never
Outside of the Miami Heat.
The Lakers can recruit free agents.
Outside of the Miami Heat, name the last dynasty that was built through free agency.
I can't think of one.
That's right. I don't want to hear that as an excuse for the Cavaliers.
But listen, they got to nail it with the fifth pick.
Did you
miss what I said earlier? The only way for the Cavaliers to get back to the
but it's
is
not
to build
just
through
the
draft.
It's building a culture. So when you do have a bunch of pieces because you've drafted well,
they want to stay.
They want to stay, and you can trade this piece and that piece and this piece for the next Paul George or for the next Anthony
Davis.
Yeah,
I mean, the Golden State Warriors are built from within. I mean, granted, yes, Kevin Durant ended up being the cherry on top when he left Oklahoma City, but they already had one in the case, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
they would have gotten another one. I know people keep saying they wouldn't have. They won 73 games. Yeah, they would have gotten another one with that.
You know, so I think that
Cavs might have gotten another one too, though.
Absolutely.
The Cavs are better in 17 than 16. Go
absolutely.
Ahead.
But my point is that, the Warriors were built internally,
mm-hmm.
Before the Kevin. So I'm nervous about that. My point is that there's only one path for the Cavaliers ever to get good again.
And it is the draft.
And no doubt about it. And that is through an area in which that they have, outside of getting lucky with the bounce of the ping pong balls.
Mm-hmm. They've struggled.
They don't draft
well. And even when they get lucky, they ended up with Anthony Bennett one year when they could have Victor Oladipo. And you know what I'm saying? So I get it. But that's why I swing for the fences. Like everything you said, and this is what I wrote on our website. If I'm the Cavs Thursday night, who has the most upside? You mentioned Lindsey Gottlieb. You mentioned John Beilein.
Yeah.
They were brought in for one reason. To coach these youngsters that could be in college that you're going to be drafted in over the next few years and help establish a culture and get the most out of them. So guess what I want to give them? The highest ceiling players. I don't need these guys that are going to be 10-5 guys as a rookie and end up being 14-7 guys. No.
Right.
Try to find the next all-star to all-NBA type player. And I think there's two. Cam Reddish. There are more than two, but two that could be available at 5 and one's guaranteed to be available at 5. Cam Reddish is that first one from Duke. I know people knock him. And then the guard from Vanderbilt, Darius Garland. Give me one of those two, and you could end up with the next Kyrie. You could end up with the next Paul George. Like, that's who people are comparing him to. You end up with one of those guys. Now we're changing things. Now things, who knows what happens. So that's what I think the Cavaliers have to do. We'll see. Make sure you keep it locked on 92.3 The Fan tomorrow. Well, now, through the draft, after the draft, we'll have you covered on air and on our website. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine. We'll get into some Indians and a little bit about the Browns. They're staying in Berea. We'll talk about it next right here on the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
James Rapine and the Dangerous Daryl Ryder with you here on the Cleveland Sports Beat podcast. Real quick, let's spend a few minutes on the Tribe before we dive into the Browns. The Indians, they have a sweep over the weekend. They win yesterday. Back-to-back-to-back Jacks. Get that. How about that? From Jake Bowers, Roberto Perez, and Tyler Naquin. That's probably the least... least likely candidates to go back to back to back. It's the first time they've done it since 2004. They're 38-34 as we record this. Daryl, you buying in? You've been a naysayer. You've been a negative Nancy. You've been down on the Tribe. To me, I've been very adamant on every show I've done, anything that I've done. The Indians still have a shot to make the playoffs. The Indians have a shot to turn this season around. They need to make a run now. And they're starting to do it. They've won four out of their last five. Your thoughts?
I can't argue with the recent success that they've had. They've won series over the Yankees, the Twins, the Red Sox, the Tigers now. They're a leg up on the Rangers. But despite how well they're playing, they're still 9.5 out. And that just shows you how deep the hole is and how much ground they have to make up, and quite frankly, I don't think that they're going to make up. The decision that they need to make is it worth playing a wild card playoff game? Because this team is not very good. I think that they're playing to their potential, and I don't want to discount what they've done over the last 3 weeks because they are playing their best baseball of the year, and hopefully that continues through the rest of the summer here. I just don't think that they have what it takes to make any type of noise in October. And they right now have played themselves into a difficult situation because 3 weeks ago it was just sell. You know, begin the process of retooling for 2020 and beyond. Now they're teasing us. And because they're in striking distance of that wild card, I think they're a half game behind the Rangers. And if they win tonight, as we record this, what is it, Wednesday? Mm-hmm. So if they win tonight, they overtake the Rangers for that second wild card spot and would be positioned to play the Tampa Bay Rays in a rematch of the 2013 wild card game that they were shut out. I think it was 1-0. I think that they've played themselves into a difficult situation and made the front office's job now more difficult. Because you've gone from we have no chance now to now, oh crap, we're in this thing. We got a shot. We can get to the wild card game. If we win the wild card game, we're in the tournament.
I think you went from that, and fans went from that to sell to Clevenger's coming back, and Kluber will be back in August, and they're suddenly hitting a little bit better. Jose Ramirez had a 3-run home run, like. Suddenly things changing. Jake Bowers might actually be good at baseball. Like, these fans are just, and this is what fans do, they react in the moment. And now it's like, oh, well, now they don't have to sell. I don't think the Indians ever said, all right, we're definitely going to be sellers. I think that they're like, all right, we're struggling right now. Let's see where we are in a couple of weeks. And that's the beauty of their schedule between now and the All-Star break. The Rangers are their only winning team that they play between now and the break. They can feast on their opponents. They had 21 games going
into get fat. That's what I call you. Get fat.
21 games going into that Tiger series.
Well, I think the one losing team that they played over that stretch was the White Sox. They lost 3 of 4, but
they won four of six series. They split with the Reds, and it was only a 2-game series.
This is how you get yourself back into the conversation is by winning series. You don't have to roll off 8, 10, 12 games in a row.
It's hard to do that in baseball. Anyway.
I understand that, but the Indians.
They've done it. I know. I get
it. Have a history of doing it every year, including up to 22 games, which I think that they kind of
that cost them. They played their best ball then.
Yeah, used all their energy up during that winning streak. But you know, is by winning series and chipping away and gradually working your way back into it. And that's what they've done. Again, I don't want to be dismissive of what they've done these last 3-4 weeks because they are, you know, they're starting to play.
They're showing signs
of
life.
Yeah, you know, the ball's starting to pop off the bats and leave the ballpark. They're starting to situationally hit. You got guys stealing home. The pitching staff is holding up their end of the bargain. So, again, I think that they have played themselves into a difficult decision for the front office. And there's more of a chance that you go for it this year if they keep this up going into the All-Star break than just sitting here and saying, okay, let's move Bauer, let's move Hand, let's get some top-tier guys that'll be available to us in 2020 and can, you know, by 2021 maybe, you know, help us be in a position to win again. And that's a good thing for the organization, but
You're so negative.
It's not about being negative. I'm just being objective about the situation. I just spent 5 minutes praising them for playing good baseball. But I objectively look at this team, and I don't think that they're a threat to anybody in the American League. I don't feel that way. And so the question I think that the Indians have to ask themselves is, you know, is getting to that wild card game worth either standing pat or trying to add to the roster and whatnot, or should they take advantage of the hot market that there is out there for a Trevor Bauer, for a Brad Hand, even though Hand is under control next year? Bauer's got another year of arbitration, so he's going to make even more money next year. Hand has 2 years, I'm sorry.
It's a team option, but it's for $10 million, so it's a no-brainer.
Okay.
In 2021.
Well, it won't be a no-brainer if he ain't here. So they have played – that's why I say they've played themselves into a difficult – situation, because I don't believe that they're legitimate pennant contenders. They're wild card game contenders.
I get it. Totally understand it. And for the most part, I agree. Like, it would be shocking if this team suddenly put it together and came back to, let's say, win the division. 10 games back, by the way. Or they put it together and somehow found a way to make a run in the playoffs. Here's what I will say. Baseball's a long season.
Oh, yeah, it is. Absolutely, no question.
The day Hugh Jackson got fired, could you believe at the end of the year that there was a chance that you'd be talking about Browns and playoffs in the final couple of weeks? That was discussed. That's 16 games.
I know. I remember. I was there.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is
things
change in a hurry.
Yeah, I know.
And especially with young players like Jake Bowers, especially with guys who weren't playing every day and then suddenly are and figure it out at the plate. Roberto Perez. Now, do they still need things to bounce their way? Yes, but so far they had a 21-game stretch where they played one winning team before the All-Star break, starting this past Friday.
Yep.
They're 4-1. They swept the Tigers. They're 1-1 against the Rangers. Even if they split with the Rangers and they come out of this 5-2 in their first two series, I set a 15-6 mark during this stretch before the All-Star break. It would put them 10 games above 500.
Yeah.
I don't think 15-6 is out there. I don't think it's outrageous. I mean, if you look, the Orioles, you know, teams like that. The Reds, I think, are the best team probably on their schedule between now and the break after the Rangers. That says something. So I think that they have a real shot here to get well above 500 for the first time all season.
And they absolutely need to take advantage of this stretch. Listen, they outperformed my expectation during that stretch with I remember a couple weeks ago we did a podcast and, you know, we said this was going to be the stretch that could potentially define and decide the season with the Twins and the Red Sox and the Yankees. And
they won all three.
Well, and I was very pessimistic and it was based on what we had watched and seen.
Sure.
Through the month of May, and I had no reason to be optimistic. And again, they went through that stretch and outperformed expectation to begin the process of chipping this thing away. But again, James, it shows you how deep of a hole they have dug themselves, and also how good the Minnesota Twins really are, because they've had no sign of drop off, and the Indians, despite playing as well as they have over these last 3 to 4 weeks, they haven't even made a dent into the Twins' lead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And I agree with you. I think the Twins, I keep expecting them to drop back, and they just don't.
They're
not
going to. I
keep expecting them to.
And I'm going to tell you, they're not going to. You know what? I think that
they haven't
dealt
with the injury bug yet. The Indians
I understand
have.
That. I think that they are. I think they're just having they're having that magical season.
Yeah.
Where
and we've seen it. We've seen that outlier year.
We have seen it here in Cleveland, where just everything's going your way. That engine's just humming along smoothly, and I don't think the Indians are catching the Twins. And again, that's not me being negative. That's not me making fun of the Indians or picking on the Indians.
They're a bully.
That's just what I see as the cold, hard math and reality that they're within right now. And the fact that they have played as well as they've had and they can't make a dent into that lead, they're not catching the Twins. Their hope is a wild card. And again, that puts this front office into a very tenuous position. Is playing a wild card game worth it to hang on to Brad Hand, to hang on to Trevor Bauer, and that you know what?
I think you could still trade them in the offseason.
I was going to say,
especially
well,
Bauer.
I think you could trade Bauer now. I think you could still trade Bauer.
Well, yeah, you could trade him. You can always trade him. It's just how much are you getting back? And obviously, they couldn't.
No,
get
no,
what
no.
They
I'm saying I think that they could still trade Trevor Bauer and still maintain the level that they're at now. I think that I don't think that if they traded Trevor Bauer, that would derail any chance that they'd have of playing in that wild card game. That's my point.
I get you, and I agree to a certain extent. The problem is who's pitching in that wild card game? Do you want it to be Bauer? Do you want it to be Clevinger? Do you want it to be Kluber, which sounds insane right now because he's on the IL? So, yeah, they have some decisions to make. I'm glad that I'm not in the front office having to make them. It's Chris Antonetti's job. That's Mike Chernoff's job. That's everybody. You know, with the Indians in that front office. Here's what I will say, and we can put a bow on it with this. I think that they've consistently shown this year, despite their flaws, and they're very flawed, no doubt about it, that they're resilient, and you never count that out. Like, I don't want to count that out. Like, if Jose Ramirez suddenly turns it on, if that 3-run home run yesterday suddenly gets him in gear, and we've said it multiple times this year, if that happens, I'm still not counting out the champ, right? I didn't count out Golden State when they were down 3-1. The Indians are the Golden State of this American League Central.
You know what you're also
They've
seeing?
Won it 3 straight years. I'm not counting them out yet, but I understand why people are.
You're seeing the value of Terry Francona as well.
No doubt about it.
This is why Terry Francona is one of the best managers in baseball. I know people get frustrated with him because he's sometimes very loyal to his veterans. He's very even keel, especially when he's talking to you guys after games that they lose.
Sure.
And sometimes those losses have been ugly, and you don't see him get real demonstrative, or you don't see him lose his collective you-know-what. He's just every day he's the same person, whether they've won 10 in a row or they've lost 10 in a row. And you're seeing the value of Tito in the steady hand and that leadership that he has, because this team isn't that good, okay? It's not. And
well, hell, he's forced to use Jason Kipnis in the four hole, Carlos Gonzalez in the four hole.
They might as well have you hit cleanup.
Tyler Naquin in the he's had multiple different guys hit in the four spot, and it's just it's tough, and he gets blamed for it for no reason.
And thank you for making my point, okay? This team, at its core, really isn't that good. Yet they have been able to weather the storm early on, and they're above 500. He's not had a losing season since he's been the manager of this ball club, and I don't think they're going to have a losing season this year.
They're on pace for 85 wins right now.
Well, they're about 7 off of what I said that they were going to have. So
I had them in the high 80s,
yeah,
but I also had them winning the division in the high 80s. That ain't happening.
Negative Daryl was drinking the Indians Kool-Aid when I said they were going to win 92, 93 games.
See, positive. You used to be positive. What happened?
Well, they started hitting
you,
like you know
watched
what.
Them. That's right.
They started hitting like the poop emoji. That's what happened.
Yeah,
and half the pitching staff went on the IL.
Yeah, so that's the thing is with all the injuries, I am shocked that they're 4 games above 500 and still really do have a shot at the playoffs. So we'll see how it plays out. Make sure you keep it locked on our website. Real quick, Daryl, a story you had. Get to it real quick. The Browns staying in Berea through 2039. What's the latest on that? Why is it so significant? And what are people saying with the Browns organization?
Well, it's significant because it just reaffirms that, you know, the team isn't going to go anywhere. I've talked to those involved in constructing this latest extension.
He means they're not moving, not that they're not going to the playoffs.
Yeah, they're like. I thought that was pretty well self-explanatory.
I know. I just got to explain. Imagine the headline. Daryl Ryder says Brown's not making playoffs.
That'd be good. So they're committed to the area. It's my understanding that there's more to this agreement than just a lease extension, but that's really all I can say at the moment about that. You know, the building just got redone a couple years ago. The city of Berea put like $15 million into it. They basically gutted both floors, expanded it. It's a state-of-the-art facility now. But it is significant because there's, you know, all this talk of, you know, could the Browns build another facility elsewhere around town? You know, would they? They seem to be really committed to having training camp in Berea for the foreseeable future. I know Columbus was out there for about the last 5-6 years as a potential training camp spot. There was conversations about maybe going to a college in the middle of nowhere, similar to like what the Buffalo Bills do to hold training camp. But it seems that the camp is going to remain in Berea for the foreseeable future as well. And it's a significant thing for the city of Berea because the Browns account, and I did not realize this, but thinking about it, you know, the Browns account for 25% of Berea's income tax revenue. That's pretty significant to a city. So it's a big deal for the city of Berea to get the Browns to commit for an extra 10 years. So they're going to be there for the next two decades. And as it was explained to me, there's no getting out of it type thing. You know, they just can't pick up and move the team tomorrow type thing. I mean, they're committed to that facility now for the next 20 years. So it's pretty significant. I am interested, though, as we go through time. I don't think that there's anything in the offing right now. I've talked to people within the Browns that tell me that they're, you know, they are happy with First Energy Stadium. It just went through a renovation a couple years ago of $125 million, but I'm interested to see as we get into the next decade here what happens in regards to a stadium, because there's really nothing. I mean, the Cleveland Sports Commission, David Gilbert, they've done such an outstanding job recruiting events. There's really nothing left for them to recruit. Now that the draft is coming, Major League Baseball All-Star Games this summer, the
NCAA tournament.
NCAA tournament, the Women's Final Four, the NBA All-Star Games coming in 2022. So really, there's only two events that they've not recruited yet. And the only way they're going to be able to recruit them is if Cleveland has a domed stadium, a domed football stadium. So it'll be interesting to see as we get into the next decade, the 2020s, and seeing you know, where things are at. One thing, I'll leave you with a little bit of a bombshell. There is a team in town to keep an eye on. Cleveland Indians. They have not extended their lease at Progressive Field. It expires in 2023. They did not participate in the county refund that they're doing with the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers spent like $40 million in capital improvements on Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, independent of the arena transformation.
Yeah.
The Indians have opted not to participate, which stuns me because the Indians have put a lot of money into Progressive Field to upgrade various parts of the ballpark. They're not participating in this because the county's, I guess, going to have to issue bonds to pay back the Cavaliers the $40 million. And the county council wanted to know, you know, what do we owe you to the Indians? The Indians said, we're not interested in participating other than just supporting the Cavaliers' endeavors, because down the road, that'll then help us for reimbursement. But we're not participating in any reimbursement right now. So I did find that to be a little interesting, and it is, I think, something over the next 5 years we probably should kind of keep an eye on, because I was shocked. I was unaware that the lease expired in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
The Cavaliers,
which is soon, that'll be quick.
Yeah, the Cavaliers' lease expires, I believe, now in 2034 as part of the arena transformation. They extended that. The Browns' lease at First Energy Stadium expires after the 2028 season.
The thing with the Browns, and it's interesting, and I think we're going to see it across the NFL, and that's why some of these teams have moved. Every owner, every organization is going to want the state-of-the-art retractable. I was at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It should be called Mercedes-Benz Dome in Atlanta last year. It's insane. Like, it isn't. I haven't been to Jerry World in Dallas yet, but it's got to rival that, because it is just insane the type of facility it is. And once you're talking about billionaires,
right,
and you start to see, oh, whoa, they have that in Dallas. Oh, Atlanta. Oh, this. It's going to start becoming a thing.
Yeah,
where these teams, these organizations, they're going to want to build new state in First Energy, 1999.
Yeah, well,
you know,
the arena, I believe, is the second oldest building in the NBA. I mean, it'll be basically a brand new building when they're done with this transformation. But when you when you talk about it, opened in 1994.
Yeah, it's not even old to me.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Progressive Field opened in 1994. The ballpark at Arlington, where the Indians are playing right now, that opened the same year as then Jacobs Field.
Yeah.
And that is being replaced by a retractable roof facility. I'll say this real quick, because I know we're wrapping up. I really wish, and I am critical of the renovations that the Indians did. I understood why they did what they did. They needed to add those premium spaces, the clubs. I don't have an argument there. I get it. I just hate them taking out the seats and putting those ugly-ass crates in right field.
Sure.
I just don't think it's aesthetically pleasing. I think it's going to look like the poop emoji when the All-Star game's here. I actually am a little disappointed the All-Star game is here this year, because I would have liked to see the Indians about 5-6 years ago actually reimagine the entire ballpark. And what I mean by that is I wish that they would have come up with like a 3-year construction plan, similar to what the Cavaliers have done to the Q.
Mm-hmm.
And it would
completely revamp and renovate it.
Basically rebuild the upper part of the ballpark. I would have started in right field. Year one, take right field all the way down to the structural steel. Leave the steel columns in place, maybe lower the lights a little bit, because you end up lowering the entire footprint of the ballpark. But leave the, and then just redo, like bring the decks down and closer to the field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do that all the way around the ballpark and basically turn it into PNC Park in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I think PNC Park is the best ballpark in baseball. The sight lines are incredible. They have, I think, 65 to 68 suites in that ballpark, which is what the Indians need. And I would have liked to see the Indians come up with a long-term comprehensive plan to lower the seating capacity and really make it a spectacular modern ballpark, because I don't find Progressive Field aesthetically pleasing to the eye anymore. Like, I go to Camden Yards. The Orioles are the Cleveland Browns from 1999 to 2017 in Major League Baseball right now. They're that effing bad, okay? Camden Yards is as beautiful today as the day it opened. Their attendance is, like, they draw like 500 fans a game, okay? And they've left the seats in. They've left the ballpark basically as is. Other than, you know, they've, you know.
Sure, you have to upgrade.
They've upgraded and maintained. And I wish the Indians would have, instead of doing what they did, which was, in my opinion, was a rush job, I really wish they would have reimagined. And I get it. It's not my money. It would have cost a lot of money to do it. I understand all that. I get it. But I wish that they would have done that, and then the All-Star game coming. Hey, welcome to the brand new Progressive Field.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Where you keep the footprint of the ballpark, the lower bowl and the field,
sure, yeah,
and everything. You keep bleachers and all, keep all that the same, but just start in right field and you just work your way around over 3 years and basically rebuild the upper part of the ballpark. It won't happen now. But I think it's not going to look nice on TV. It's going to look so gaudy, so ugly. Center field's beautiful.
Yeah.
Moving the bullpens, beautiful job. What they did behind the home plate, beautiful job. I like the drink rails that they put in each of the left and right field corners there. Beautiful job. The club section that they redid, beautiful job.
I mean, you just named a lot of the ballpark.
Right. But... there's but just, I get it. You know what I'm saying? Just hacking off the mezzanine the way they did and putting those crates. It's so gaudy, so ugly, just not aesthetically pleasing at all. And everyone's going to look at that on national TV next month. Ugh, yuck.
He's Dale Ryder. I'm James Erpine. That's going to do it for us. All-Star Game coverage, we're your number one spot for that at 92.3thefan.com. Same thing with Browns. Cavs draft coverage, draft an all-star, Garland or Cam Reddish. I almost forgot Reddish's name. Either one would play along with Colin Sexton. Yeah, Daryl's like, it doesn't matter. We'll be back at it next week. Subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcast. Until then, I'm James Erpine. He's Daryl Ryder. Thank you for listening to the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.